Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, this is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. Our show tonight is based on abolishing probate, and we have an extremely special guest with us, Mr. Steve Miller. And for those of you who have been following all these issues and all this crap going on state to state, you know that Steve has just been working his tail end off out there in Nevada trying to get this crap stopped. And course, we have a nemesis out there that just seems to be untouchable that we're going to be talking about. As we move through this, the blowback from the bar associations, from judicial oversight boards, even from legislators, is becoming more organized and a little more virulent. When you contact your legislators, always be civil, always be professional, but state your case. And don't ever make the mistake that when they tell you, oh, I'm gravely concerned, I'm truly worried, well, I never heard of this before, blow that off. They're going to pretend they never heard from you. Now, that's just the truth. They are not your good friend. They are not your buddy. And you will probably be put on a list where you can't contact them again, or you'll get the answering machine and they'll get back to you, and they never do. I hear this from people all the time. So don't put your faith there. It's going to take us working out here in the public. It's going to take the public itself to get this mess stopped. And it's going to take people like our guest this evening. Now, for those of you who might not be familiar with Steve, he writes an internationally syndicated column on organized crime and political corruption for AmericanMafia.com, the Las Vegas Voice, and the Canada Free Press, and listed on the promo, not only here on Blog Talk, but on the PPJ, are his website connections, his Facebook connections, and he's also listed in Wikipedia. He's a former Las Vegas City Councilman, former Clark County Regional Transportation Commissioner, Chairman Emeritus of Goodwill Industries of Southern Nevada, and President Emeritus of Opportunity Village. In 1998, Steve was inducted into the Nevada Broadcasters Hall of Fame. I love that. In 1998, the Las Vegas Review Journal Special Edition, the first 100, listed Steve in a historical record of the people who contributed most to the shaping of Southern Nevada. And with that, please let me welcome to the show Steve Miller. Steve, how you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for inviting me on, Marty.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you. Steve, you've been working this issue there in Nevada. We have followed this particular guardian out there, watched him in courtrooms swearing that it was the families that robbed his victims and it wasn't him. And we've seen a couple of his proteges hung out to dry and him remain untouchable. Where is this situation at right at this moment? Where would you estimate it to be?
Well, Jared E. Schaefer, the person whom we're both referring to, is still at large, and I use the word at large. That basically describes a criminal who's on the street. In my opinion, he's a criminal. He had been the inventor, the mastermind, again, in my opinion, of the guardianship racket that has manifested itself throughout the United States. So when you talk about Las Vegas and Nevada, it's not because we're just a victim of it. We started it. It started here about 40 years ago when Schaefer was appointed the public guardian. And then from that point on, it's been horrible for the people who have come in contact with him. Numbers of them have been taken for everything they're worth under the color of law.
Yes. One of the things I talk about a lot, Steve, is the erection of these administrative tribunals. And just recently, because everything is blowing up here in Minnesota regarding the nursing homes, and it is now moving to the guardianship issue. And the fact that these are statutory, they are created, fictionally created statutes to do an end run around the Constitution, and I have constantly referred to them as tribunals. And people said, oh, no, they're actual courts of law. No, they are not. And I just found on the Minnesota website dealing with guardianship where the Bar Association has entered its voice into that, where they openly refer to them as tribunals, and they are not required to follow code rules of evidence, code of civil procedure, any of the normal things you would in a civil or criminal court. Now, when you talk about it's all starting there in Las Vegas, in Nevada, and spreading across the country, what I have noticed is I've worked state to state on various things, that these statutes all seem to be almost identical. So this would make sense to me that they had a starting point. Somebody set all this in motion and everybody else just followed the plan. And it's been quite successful. Steve, explain to me the difference between a public guardian and just say somebody else who's a guardian.
A private guardian? Well, the public guardian is someone who works for the county in most cases, and that they're there supposedly to look out for persons who are still alive but are wealthy and don't have someone else to look out for them, at least, you know, in the mind of the public guardian. A private guardian is someone who is appointed by a court to do the same thing, but in most instances, at least the ones that I'm studying, the private guardians are completely out of control. Once they get the power of attorney over their wards, and I hate the word, that's what they're called legally, their ward, they're able to get into their bank accounts, their safety deposit box, their will or their will and testament, their family trust, anything becomes the possession of the guardian. The guardian's able to, with a judge's signature, which is all too easy for them to get, who knows if they're paying the judges to get the signature, with the judge's signature, they're able to take everything out of the bank account, out of the safety deposit box, to transfer the title of a house or a car to themselves and pay themselves and pay their lawyers. And meantime, the family members, who are usually the heir to the fortune, we're not dealing here with poor people. We're dealing here with people with at least $300,000 and above.
Right.
And the estate is now being pilfered by a private guardian, and a judge is signing off again and again and again, and the family is saying, wait a minute, they hire an attorney, the attorney goes to court, the court is all one-sided, the bank of attorneys on the side of the guardian are being paid for by the loved one's money that's being pilfered, and you're having to pay for your own attorney, and this is going on for years and years. Meantime, your loved one is locked away in a rest home being drugged, and you have no control whatsoever. And in most cases, the loved one dies because they're elderly or infirm.
Right.
And here is the family saying, excuse me, my mom, my dad, my uncle, whomever, worked all their life so that there'd be an inheritance for their kids or for their family members or for their friends, and now where is that inheritance? And it's gone, and the court signed off on it.
Exactly. And that's, you know, Steve, I've always likened this to having to weave the rope to hang yourself, that the person victimized by this system, the target of all of this, pays for everything. They pay for judge, jury, and executioner, only you don't get a jury.
Right.
That's another thing about statutory law, as they call it. It's code and statute, code rules and regulations that are artificial in their construct, and they always attack your constitutional rights, like your right to due process, the right to face your accuser, the right to see the evidence against you. And
the
so
right
they had to get
vote.
Yes.
That's
and one thing I found out was a lot of these guardians across the country are leaving intact the right to vote. And I thought, well, isn't that odd? Well, what they do is they use that as a basis. If somebody files an American with Disabilities Act claim against them, and a civil rights lawsuit, they say, oh, no, we didn't take their civil rights. They can still vote. But the thing is, the person themselves doesn't vote. That guardian votes by proxy for that person. That's who
the
goes in and votes in their
the
name.
Person.
Yes,
you know,
it's
terrible,
the ultimate. Yeah,
no, there
ultimate
was a terrible
identity
movie,
theft.
Marty, there was a terrible movie, a B-movie called Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And
yes.
That's what this reminds me of, because the guardian becomes the person legally.
Yes.
And
yes.
The family says, Mom, Dad, what happened? And the mom and the dad, who are usually in a rest home under very heavy psychotropic drugs,
mm-hmm.
just looks at him and says, well, you have to talk to the guardian. They've got my bank account. They've got my car. They've got my house. They have everything.
Yes.
And that is
their personal
that is
possessions.
These stories,
yes.
You know, the story of Marcy Dudek is one that I think is so poignant. And it happened here in Las Vegas. And it was this lovely woman had everything taken from her. And it began when she was put under the guardianship of Jared E. Schaefer by the court. And the reason for that is she was wealthy. And that's why you become the ward of a guardian. And Mrs. Dudek, all of her responsibilities were there upon Mr. Schaefer, and he
mm-hmm.
then neglected to pay her taxes for 3 years. And so at the California family members, the daughter and her husband, were informed that the guardian had not paid the taxes for 3 years. So they decided, well, Mom seems to be fine, and they had managed to get her moved down into a rest home near them in Southern California. Well, what does she need a guardian in Nevada for? So they began the legal process to become the guardian of their mom. And it so happened that because Schaefer realized he hadn't built the woman enough, in my opinion, he goes and has her kidnapped and brought to Nevada against her will, where she died several months later of dehydration. Could you imagine
mm-hmm.
being here in the desert not having water? Well, that was the cause of death. And so the family in California could do nothing to stop this from occurring. Now, the woman, Marcy Dudek, was taken from California by force, basically. And she was here, meaning in California. I'm in Nevada. But she was in Southern California on the orders of a judge here in Nevada. And so against the judge's orders, she was taken back to Nevada. She was supposed to stay in California for the rest of her natural life. She was taken back to Nevada, and the judge forgave Mr. Schaefer for kidnapping, I guess. The word, I don't know what they used legally.
Oh,
but
my
it was
God.
A kidnap. And so the woman returned to Nevada against her will and against the will of her loved ones and died here shortly thereafter of dehydration in a horrible place that he put her. In the meantime, all of her worldly possessions became his. So, you know, I'm looking at that as one of the cases that I've studied.
Mm.
And that's a typical case. I can name maybe 10 more that are just as bad. And it's
yeah.
sickening to think this could happen to your mom, your dad, the person you love the most in your life.
Yes. Well, I think you made a very salient point, too, and one we've harped on a lot, that when you become a ward, that person has effectively stolen your identity.
Correct.
And they become you. They present themselves as you. They have access to everything that you own, and they also have complete and control of you, the shell of the person that's left. And that what these people, these guardians like Schaefer, get away with is so horrendous. And so you know they have to be operating with protection, and who's protecting them and why. When you spoke about out there in Las Vegas, it's always, you know, these wealthy individuals. We have guardians now, Steve, across the country that are doing business by volume. We have that one running up there in Detroit who has 1,700 clients. And she is taking all of their Social Security, railroad benefits, VA, whatever they got, and she gives them $44 a month. Spending money,
yeah.
and then puts them in a residential home that she owns. She's doing it by volume, and we're
sure.
seeing more and more of this. This is absolutely, to me, terrifying. That
it's
there
terrifying
are these...
when
yes.
when you go to
go
the
ahead.
Police department and you file a complaint, and then there is nothing to follow. And that's
yeah.
happened here dozens of times. Our local police department is totally impotent when it comes to investigating or asking the DA or the AG to prosecute these crooks. And this is something that has bothered me for the past 6 months, because I was present during one of the complaints that was filed with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department abuse and neglect detail, and the detectives totally ignored Jason Hansen's complaint against
yes.
Jared Schaefer after Schaefer took his house. And so, and I was present because Mr. Hansen is 28 years old. He's a cerebral palsy victim.
Mm-hmm.
And he became a ward when he was 17, when his dad died. He had no other relatives. Now he's 28. I'm his best friend. He asked me, would you sit in when I do my complaint with the Metro Police Abuse and Neglect Detectives? I said, I'd be glad to. And I was there. So I'm I'm personally a witness to a very viable complaint being filed by a brilliant young man. And the police department just fluffing it off like it wasn't real, like he was lying to them. And then later when they called him and he asked, you know, what's going on, they blame me and they blame several other people who were involved in either reporting what is going on or advocating for persons who were victims. They were trying to say, in fact, Detective Angie Christensen of Las Vegas Metro said, Steve Miller and Jared Schaefer were once very close friends. Steve Miller has a grudge against Schaefer, and now he's trying to get even. I mean, where did that come from?
Jiminy Christmas.
I mean, to hear that from a detective.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, of course, we're not going to do anything, Mr. Hansen, to help your case because your buddy was there, and your buddy is, I guess, doing this for some personal reason or gain.
I see.
You know, just, I don't even have to say it's untrue. How horrible. And I thought, how dare someone who doesn't know me say such a thing about me? And then the same Detective Christensen from Metro said this about Becky Schultz, whose dad had been ripped off for over $435,000 by Schaefer. Oh, she's got a grudge against Schaefer, so that's why she's trying to help you. She has a grudge.
Oh, well. What gets me is in the Hansen case, let's just assume for the sake of argument that what the detective was saying was true. What bearing did that have
on
Mr. Hansen's complaint?
Nothing.
It had nothing. Nothing. Exactly. It should have had no. So that could not have been a viable reason. It was an excuse they gave him, one apparently they fabricated. But I'd have demanded they show evidence of this supposed close relationship.
They dropped the case. And in the meantime, our local district attorney, Steve Wolfson, reached out to Jason Hansen and asked him to come to the office, which in itself is quite a chore because, you know, Jason's in an electric wheelchair. But Jason made his way to the office, came up to visit with the DA and the top DA investigators. They interviewed him. They asked him about his complaint to Metro, gave him a copy of the filing. And so then I was called by the DA thanking me for helping Jason. He was, you know, a nice man. He calls me and he says that. And I said, well, I guess we're going to sit and wait for Metro to file requests for prosecution with your office. He says, right. He says, because we cannot initiate the prosecution unless the police department has asked us to do so.
Right.
Nothing. Nothing.
Yep.
Nothing
from
that moment forward came from Metro. So I just look at this and I'm saying, you know, and I love police officers, but there is a couple of bad apples at our police department. Now, how does the sheriff feel about that? Well, he's running for re-election. I hope somebody asks him.
Yeah. Wow. This is just, and we see this all over the place, a collusion between these people who run in the public and law enforcement, which we've covered this quite a bit on this show. In order, people say, well, I'll go to the FBI. You can't. You have to go through the police first, and they have to complete their investigation. And then they have to recommend.
The FBI only steps in when the locals drop it. If the local DA, AG, or police department don't want it, and the feds think that it's political and maybe there's a reason why they don't want it, the feds can step in. And I've been involved over the years with the feds over this. The FBI gets involved. You really find, you know, some very good people in the FBI. But in this case, they should be involved because it travels over state lines. All of the thefts and all of the scams with the guardianship scam is over state lines. So the feds should be involved. But they say, well, we're not going to usurp the local police. Or if the police did their job and they turned over requests for prosecution to the AG or to the DA, we're not going to usurp the AG and the DA while they're active. Well, in the meantime, at this point in Las Vegas history. I guess they're supposed to still be active because the feds haven't stepped in, and they've been made totally aware of the Hansen case and numbers of other current cases that need to be prosecuted.
Don't you wonder, Steve, what hold this man has over them? Usually when I see people...
Out.
You did? Go ahead. What is it?
Well, I figured it out. Well, I mean, okay, we've got local family court judges taking extravagant vacations, and Schaefer has a very close friend who owns a cruise travel agency. We have judges, and we have other individuals who write laws or don't enforce laws they're supposed to enforce that get billboards from Schaefer. Schaefer owns a billboard company, and so during election time, he's the man to go to for free or very cheap political billboards.
Oh.
He owns thousands of billboards. I mean, not only is he a guardian, but he's the billboard man. So it's hard to win an election here in Nevada without Schaefer's billboards.
I see.
You know, that's a good one. I mean, these are the this is the information I've come forward with. It's my personal observation. I think he's buying off the judges. I personally think he's also buying off some of the legislators, hopefully not the DA and the AG, but those billboards are so powerful. He owns, they're portable. They go up on every vacant lot in the state of Nevada during election season. And if you don't have Schaefer's billboards, you lose.
Ah, okay. Okay. Chevening Christmas. And so this man's been allowed to prey on the public because he can advertise for politicians. Oh, my God.
That's about it. Or he can advertise against a politician he doesn't like.
Yes.
And it's just... He even owns the silk screening firm, I was told, that does the actual, paste ups that they put on these 12 by 14 or 8. They're large billboards, but they're on wheels.
Yes. Oh, wow. Wow. In that Jason Hansen case, I think one of the things that struck me is one of the decisions that came down that said that he had waited too long to file, and excuse me, if he didn't know what happened to him, how could he have? Doesn't the statute read from the time you become aware?
That's what we felt, and his attorney felt that way, and so it was a matter, I think, of a lazy judge who just didn't want it. That's how I feel, because the judge was the one who made the determination that the statute had run out. Here's Jason at 18. He was supposed to have sued all these people. He didn't know any better. And now he's 28, and he didn't learn about it until 2016. He was 25, 26 years old when he learned that his money was gone and his house had been sold. I mean, we didn't even know it ourselves. I mean, he shows up at a meeting one day, a public hearing, and in his wheelchair asks, "What happened to my inheritance?" Everybody just perked up, and so did the local media. And they started, he became very well known. Because one of the people on the commission that he was confronting was one of the lawyers who stole his money.
Oh, my God.
And
he
just asked her point blank. He says, "You were my attorney. What happened to my inheritance?" And
what
she
did she
then
say?
She didn't say anything then. She began to cry. And that's, interestingly, going to be in a movie because there was a movie company there that was filming it. But that the movie, that it will be coming out soon, called The Guardians. But nonetheless, she began to cry. The next day, she cut him a check for $5,300, saying this is the remaining balance of your inheritance, which was close to $300 before Schaefer got his hands on it.
Oh,
now
my
he
God.
Has $5,300. So then... When I realized what happened, I said, "You need a lawyer. You need to sue in civil court. The police aren't going to do anything." So I helped him to find a really good attorney, and he went ahead and filed a civil lawsuit. But the police department were also brought in at that point, and we thought the police were working on it while the civil attorney Jacob Hafter wound the case through the local courts, not to ever even. In their wildest dream, think that a judge was going to throw it out because of a time limitation. The statute ran out. After all of Jacob's work, the judge says, "Oh, you should have done this when you were 18. Sorry."
Oh, my God.
Dismissed. And so Schaefer walked out of the courtroom laughing.
Oh,
but
God.
It involved over $100,000 in cash. It involved a house worth at least $200,000.
And
we managed.
What happened?
We managed to recover.
See, where is Jason now?
Well, he's in a group home here in Las Vegas.
Oh, my God.
He's
okay.
with Opportunity Village, which I love. It's a wonderful organization. But
okay.
he lives okay. And Jacob Hafter, the attorney, was able to get Jason back his inheritance, which the Schaefer had allowed to go into the unclaimed funds account of the New York State Treasurer's Office. I couldn't believe that happened.
Yeah,
I mean,
really?
Jason,
that messed him. Yeah.
Jason's parents had left him over $100,000.
Okay.
And it was all in stocks and bonds, so it was in a New York Stock Exchange. So it ends up never being claimed. His guardian, that being Schaefer, and this woman who was the attorney who was, like I mentioned, was confronted by Jason earlier, allowed the money to disappear. At first we thought they stole it. We learned later it was just negligently allowed to just go somewhere, and it ended up in a dead letter office. It ended up in an unclaimed fund account of the New York State Treasurer. That's how we found it. And now we've we got it back for Jason.
I'm surprised Schaefer hasn't come after him again. This guy, you know, Steve, as I've watched you report on him and all these stories that come out there, I don't know how, like, law enforcement or these judges or these council members, whomever they are, can sit there with all that you've exposed time after time after time and keep protecting this man. It's got to be more than billboard signs and cruise trips. There's got to be something else. He strikes me as one of those people that is constantly looking for a compromising situation that could ruin you. And I always feel like this is what's behind, or he's doing something. It has to be more than this, because you couldn't get away with this much, not with as much exposure as he's received. The other thing is, has he ever, Steve, come back at you?
No.
Like for defamation? I find that odd, too.
Well, it's because I'm telling the truth.
Yes.
I'm telling the truth. And I would love him to do it, because it would be my pleasure to bring this to a jury. I mean, my goodness. During defamation type of cases, you can bring up anything. I could bring up the entire Dudek case and the Olvera case and the Hansen case, and I could bring up hundreds more where he just robbed these people blind, and the family members couldn't stop him. If he would somehow sue me, that would be my pleasure, and I consider it my public service to bring it up, because sometimes you're just looking for a venue where you can speak. I'd love it to be in a courtroom. I speak, obviously.
Yes.
I'd love to speak in court. Put the people on the witness stand, bring Jason in his wheelchair. He would love to call Schaefer a crook again, as he has in the past. Schaefer knows better, so no, he's not going to sue me.
Yeah.
And if he did, I would almost pay his legal fees.
Almost, but not quite.
Yeah.
But see, that's
what struck me. I might contribute to his legal fund to sue Steve Miller.
But this is what gets me is, as much as you've exposed this man for his corruption is the least of it, that he has never come back, because he's a predator by nature, and tried to find an avenue to come after you. But you're right, because you're telling the truth. It's only libel or slander if you lie.
Of course. And the day that the district attorney invited me to come visit, evidently somebody in the DA's office told Schaefer, because Schaefer called my house 30 minutes before the meeting, and I couldn't take the phone mainly because I had to get out of here and go downtown. So I wrote back to him. I said, "Oh, hi. I'll get back to you, but I need to go see the DA, and then afterwards I got to take the dog to get a bath, and then I got to go to I have to go and buy some fingernail polish for my wife." And I made about 14 excuses. And I got back to him the next day, but he didn't answer.
Oh,
I guess
darn.
He was trying to tell me, don't go talk to the district attorney.
Yeah. And I just don't get it. And I'm watching across the country, Steve. You know, like I said, things are blowing up here in Minnesota.
I'm glad that maybe we're having a little something to help you with. And if this movie, The Guardians, comes out, which is a fantastic two-hour documentary made mainly for television, but it's so well done, by Billy Mintz from Toronto. If this comes out in the next 6 months or a year, you'll have ammunition galore, because it is not only about Jared Schaefer. It's mainly about Jared Schaefer. But it gives you the MO, the modus operandi of everything that is happening in Minnesota and all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think he wrote the book.
Yeah. I'm beginning to think you're right about that, too. Like I say, I've always said that there was a master plan somewhere that everybody is following, because these things are too, you know, you can just follow from state to state. The similarities go beyond being similarities, and it's almost identical. And the idea that these tribunals are set up, and that you have no rights, and you can't have a jury, and you can't present evidence, and you can't do this, you can't do that, but they can stand up and say whatever they want to, and they don't need any proof. One of the things we talked about here last week was when I was first doing these shows, Steve, virtually every case that was sent to me, and there were hundreds of them, the person had been determined to be bipolar. Every one of them. They were I thought, now who knew that many elderly people were bipolar? We kept pointing this out on the shows, and it was about that time they changed terminology from incompetency, which, as I understand it under the law, requires a massive amount of evidence, which they didn't have, to capacity. Incapacitated, you could have stubbed your toe, broken your arm, and you were incapacitated, so that meant you couldn't handle your affairs. It could be that flimsy. And but you step down to this lesser definition that required less of the people bringing the charges. But I can't tell you the number of people, the cases, hundreds of them, they were bipolar.
Oh.
And they would start them immediately on these drugs. It's too pat, like I say, from state to state. And this concerns me. The idea that the bar associations have basically set all of this up, put it all into play. And if you try to change anything in the state, which they're doing in Minnesota right now, they're sending in lobbyists. The Nursing Home Association, who claims they're too broke to pay people a decent wage, they've sent in their lobbyists, and they're fighting it. One of the things they're fighting, Steve, is putting video cameras in the rooms, which I'm all for.
Yep.
And they're saying, it would violate the patient's privacy. Really? But somebody going in the room and beating them up? That's not violent. It's for their protection. You should give them the option.
The lawyers are harvesting these people.
Yes.
The wards are the geese that are laying the golden eggs for the lawyers.
Yes.
Because the guardian has to hire lawyers. And sometimes they pay the lawyers double what a normal lawyer gets, we notice.
Yes.
A whole bank of attorneys sometimes shows up in family court against the family member of the loved one who's being reamed. And the lawyers are getting anywhere from $300 to $500 an hour, like they're top-notch lawyers. And all they're doing is just schmoozing with the judge, who's one of their buddies. And like you say, it's a tribunal, and no one is allowed to speak. When they are allowed to speak, they're sometimes threatened with... we're going to have the marshal escort you out of here, or contempt of court, or whatever. The ward sometimes is not even invited to their own hearing. And they're not allowed to speak. And if they are there, a lot of times they're so drugged that they don't want to speak. And it's over soon, usually. People die from the stress of being a ward. You die a lot of times, very prematurely. And then what's going to happen? And the family members realize, well, if I try to get whatever's left, the guardian is going to hire these expensive lawyers and charge it off to the estate. And so it's over, and people give up. This is not the sexiest story. It's not about, some porn star or something. That's the kind of thing that makes the news.
Right.
This is a story which, I've tried for years to get people to tell the story. Can I kind of tell you what 60 Minutes did, CBS 60 Minutes? Okay. We had a very famous lady here in Las Vegas, not famous herself, but her family, the Piccoli family. She passes away with a fortune of, maybe $100 million from her family, and big house and lots of, funds. And so Schaefer, before she died, became her guardian and started charging $400,000 a year for his services. Well, the lady dies in 2008, And I then become interested in it as a reporter back in, I guess, about 2014 or so, because the lady was still alive, according to the Clark County Family Court.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I took a picture of the tombstone. It said, you know, Leanne Piccoli died on such and such a date in 2008. Well, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't going to dig to see if there was somebody in the grave, but it was obvious something was wrong. How could she still be alive in the eyes of the court? Well, the court was signing off every 6 months against the law, basically, Schaefer's request to keep the guardianship going, because he was basically, in my opinion, bilking her estate of everything that
yes.
he could take. And this went on and on. Well, I wrote a story called Grave Robbery Under Color of Law for AmericanMafia.com, and it got picked up by CBS 60 Minutes in New
oh,
York.
Oh, wow.
They sent out their top producer, Bob Anderson, to visit with me. And so
uh-huh.
I, at that point, realized this is a big deal, and I'm going to help them in every way possible. So the camera crew comes out. They spend the entire summer chasing Schaefer all around town, interviewing his former associate who was in prison, Patience Bristol,
mm-hmm.
interviewing a lot of the victims, and then they cancel the showing of it in October
what?
Of that same year of 2014. They canceled the segment on 60 Minutes, and I received a call from Bob Anderson saying, and he was very despondent, and he's their senior producer. He says, "We're not going to do it." I said, "Why?" He said, "Everything is legal. Nothing,
mm-hmm.
nothing that we have in our report is illegal in your state." And he made my state sound like a piece of crap. But he says, "In
yeah.
your state, it's all legal. Everything that Schaefer has done that we've been investigating has been signed off by either Judge Hoskin or Judge Norheim.
Mm-hmm.
And if the judge signs it off, it's legal, Steve." And he broke my heart, and they went away. We never got the segment on 60 Minutes about Schaefer because it's all legal, Marty.
Well, is it? What about morality? Is it moral? Is it
oh,
ethical?
That was. I was explaining to Bob Anderson. I said, "Now you really have a story. It's immoral." I said, "The
yeah.
story is how immoral can a state be to allow these laws that Schaefer actually wrote, because you know we like to call these laws Schaefer's laws." But they're all basically to protect the guardian. And the judge
yes.
can go against his own orders if he wishes. Just sign off, sign off, sign off, and let the guardian just at will go ahead and take everything he wants from the wards that the court assigned him, if they're rich enough.
Yes.
And the families just watch. They can't stop it. And it's called isolate, medicate, steal the estate. Isolate.
Terminate.
Find out, first
yep.
of all, the rich person and get them away from their family. Take them out of their home. Lock them up in a rest home 30 miles away. Then
yes.
medicate, meaning get them on psychotropic drugs immediately. Just zone them out. And then
yep.
steal the estate.
Yep. Yeah, and now it has come full circle on that, and we are into the terminal sedation thing, hospice. We've been covering
yeah.
that also. And that is scaring me to death, Steve, the large number of elderly and disabled people that are being forced into hospice under false diagnosis that you've only got 6 months or less to live, who are dead in 10 to 20 days.
Well, Mrs. Dudek died of dehydration months after
yes.
she was brought back here against her will. Yeah, and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are no real medical experts making the determination as to
right.
someone's need for a guardian.
Right.
It's being done by, you know, nurses, assistants. I mean, it's being done
mm-hmm.
by people with no degrees whatsoever. We found
right.
the same name again and again and again on these letters saying that this person needs a guardian. And it wasn't even a professional. It was somebody who worked in a hospital somewhere.
Yep.
But had
yep.
no background whatsoever. But, you know, if you go back into the April Parks case and review it, you'll find out she used the same supposed reference for all of her people she was ripping off. Everybody was incompetent. It was the same
yes.
medical professional signature on the letter saying this person's incompetent.
Yes.
And that person, they never did an evaluation. They just said, the only evaluation they did was, Assets.
Right. Yes. Now, have you got that thing there in Nevada? I know New Mexico, it was one of the first states I knew of, that even after the death of the targeted victim, they were holding the guardianship open anywhere from 3 to 6 years. Some states have gone back as far as 10 years, holding it open beyond death to make sure everything is gotten, everything is squeezed out of that estate.
I mentioned that was the Piccoli case here. She was dead from, she died, God rest her soul, in 2008, but her estate was still being bilked by Schaefer back in 2014 when I wrote about it, and 60 Minutes came out here. So I'm saying that happened here, and it happens elsewhere. All you need is a judge to sign it off, because in most states they have a limit of like 6 months and 120 days.
You've
got
to close
out
down,
the
yeah.
estate. You got to close it down. But if a judge signs it off, it can go another 120, another 120. It just keeps going and going. Years later, the person, you'd think they're still alive.
Yeah. Yeah. That first time I ever saw that in action was that Dorothy Griega case out in Washington State. And she had had millions of dollars in charitable trusts in Bank of America, and or was in Wells Fargo, and they were transferring to Bank of America, setting up new trusts with fake ID number, tax ID numbers and everything, and siphoning this money out of these accounts. That was reported to the IRS. They did not do anything, and she had like $22 million in these trusts for charity, and they got every bit of it. And this, at the time I came across this story, she'd been dead 8 years, and they were still taking this money. And so it never stops. Like you say, it can keep going as long as you can get a judge to sign off on it. It can keep going till they get absolutely everything. And what bothers me is, okay, let's go to this patient's Bristol and the money she took from her victims. And my question is this, Steve. Okay, you catch one of these people and they bilked people out of a couple $1 million. Why aren't their assets seized, auctioned off, sold, and the proceeds from that divvied up between the families of the victims they robbed? And somebody said, they hide their assets. Well,
They do. Well, I mean, here's Patience Bristol, April Parks. There have been civil suits against both of them, won by the families of the wards, but they can't find the money. So, I mean, there's no money to be had. I mean, how can you get back your inheritance when April Parks or Patience Bristol, I don't know what they did with it, but it's not available. You know, this is where I think the feds need to step in. We need the FBI to get involved in this, because these people are pretty well versed on how to hide their money. Because it's amazing how much they steal, but then when the time comes that they have to pay amends, there's nothing left. Where did it go?
Right. Yes.
Do
you own a house? Yeah. Do you have a house, a car? What do you? This is what I'm saying. It's got to be somewhere. So I think the answer to that problem would be that they just stay in jail until they cough up where it's at.
Well, I'd love to see that happen with these people.
Yeah.
But the problem is the people who we're talking about, like April Parks and Patience Bristol and you know, some of these other individuals who, you know, have been caught, are the small potatoes. They're the low-hanging fruit. They don't go after the mastermind. The mastermind is Jared Schaefer. These are his proteges that they caught, and they put them away, and they get out, and I guess their money's somewhere, maybe in the Cook Islands or somewhere. But
offshore.
You know, maybe so they can go live with it, you know, all the money they stole from their wards. But they never go after the big guy. They only go after the low-hanging fruit, who were mainly his proteges or his assistants.
What scares me is that this seems to be ramping up across the country. And it's blatant. It's out there now. It's just like I say, things up here in Minnesota are blowing up. And what angers me is our legislature and our governor and other notables in the community are all acting like they had no idea. They didn't know this was going on till this big report came out from the state auditor's office about what a disaster this whole system was. And this feigned shock and how they're going to fix it and they're going to do this and that. So if you're going to fix it and you're writing legislation, I want to know why those lobbyists are in there shooting their mouths off.
I was so disappointed when CBS 60 Minutes dropped it, but we do have a movie coming out, and that's going to be called The Guardians. It's by Billy Mintz. He's an award-winning film producer, and so maybe that'll be the key. We've got to get the straw to break the camel's back, and I think it's got to be done through national publicity.
Yes.
You know, it has to be a major network that shows it again and again and again, and then watch the states and all these tribunals and everybody start to, you know, perk up. We're going to start to have to really do our job now.
Yeah.
But again, it's not a porn star story, so, you know, it takes a little bit more effort to get
what can
it
we
out
do
there.
To promote it? What can we do to help push this
along?
Well,
when it comes out, I'll let you know. We're still waiting for announcement as to when it's going to air, on what network, and then you and I and anyone who has any, you know, following is going to have to let the world know, because it's, like I say, it's not about a porn star. Nobody's going to just tune it in. It's going to be one that we're going to have to kind of, you know, make people want to watch, like Edith and Eddie. You know, it was a beautiful movie, but you have to watch it two or three times to really appreciate it, and how many people saw it. I wish everyone saw it, but, you know, these are wonderful stories, but they're so sad that you'd rather turn the station and watch a porn star on 60 Minutes.
Well, see, not me. I know what you're saying.
I didn't watch it, but I'm using that as a horrible example of what people will watch.
Yes, and they will watch it, or they'll watch sports or something else just as, you know.
I don't want to cry. Edith and Eddie, the movie Edith and Eddie makes you want to cry. The movie The Guardians will make you either want to cry or go get a shotgun. You're going to get so pissed.
Yeah, and I think that's what the reason they will try to squelch this thing down and keep it from coming out is because if people do watch it and this is exposed, and especially about this man running loose, this is a predator. This is, to me, Steve, this is no different than somebody that preys on children. They're preying on the vulnerable.
Yeah,
and
the weakest of the weak.
Yes, and... And he's getting rich. Who's going to inherit all of this stuff that he stole? We need to go after them.
I'm probably going to underestimate his wealth at around $100 million.
Oh my God!
And it wasn't.
He needs
honestly,
Steve. He needs to be guardianized.
He needs a guardian. But in reality, it's just being stolen after 40 years of stealing from Las Vegas retirees and people moving here from colder climates, you know, you know, snowbirds, whatever, you know. That's why Las Vegas was such a rich, you know, harvest for him, is the fact that people move here from all over the country to get away from the cold and to be near the casinos.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, it's a nice place to live, for, especially if you're elderly. And here comes these people to prey on them. And that's what is so sad about Las Vegas. And that's why I've been warning people. I think last time I was on your show, I said, think twice before you retire here.
Yes, yes. And you know, you wouldn't think in such a high-profile city with, you know, the background that it has with the mafia and that kind of thing, you wouldn't think this kind of thing would go on, that people there would be so cautious and so vigilant that things like this couldn't happen. But apparently that's not the case, because I have to agree with you. This basically, this whole system sprung up right there somewhere, and it just seemed to spread like a cancer across the country once word got out that you could make a good living stealing from the elderly and throw them in one of these homes and shut them up so they can't talk.
I had a sit down. I write for AmericanMafia.com, so you know, I guess I know a few people. So I had a sit down with probably the most important guy in Las Vegas, you know, like the Don. And he was so angry when he heard about Jared Schaefer and when he heard about Jason Hansen losing his house to Jared Schaefer, and knew that Jason is in a wheelchair and he's quadriplegic and he's a brilliant young man and had everything stolen. I think I saved Schaefer's life. I honestly do.
Oh, wow.
I told the Don, I can't mention his name, but I told him, I said, if something happened to Schaefer, nobody's going to learn a lesson. He needs to go to prison. He needs to go through it. He needs to go through a tribunal, an adjudication. He should be in court. The whole world should know he's being prosecuted. I said, to send a message to other Schaefers around the country, you can't do this and you can't get away with it. So I think I saved his life, because I got a feeling if I hadn't have said that, I don't think we would have. I think we would have heard of Schaefer getting run over by a train. But you know, the mafia is still alive and well.
Yes.
They just hate anybody who takes advantage of the elderly. Believe it or not, the mafia, some of them have a heart.
Yes, they do. I grew up in an Italian settlement, and I know how the environment is, and there's just certain things you do not do, and they do have a code of ethic, whether people think they do or not. You may not agree with everything they do, but behind all of that, there is a code of ethics there, and there's just certain lines you do not cross. And I can see where this person you were speaking to, his first instinct was, this guy's got to go. Steve, I remember here, what was it, a couple years back, there was several families had gotten him into court, and he was standing up on this, and it's a YouTube video made of it, telling the judge that it was the families who stole all this money. It was the family. It wasn't him. It was the families. And I was looking at the faces of the family. I mean, the shock on their face that this man would stand up like nothing in the world was wrong, like he was some kind of saint, and accused them when here they had been robbed of their inheritance, robbed of their parents or their whomever it was. They had been robbed of everything, and he was the robber. And the judge let him get away with that.
And in court, when the family members come and they say, you know, I'd love to take my dad to, you know, our home and have him stay with us since mom died. Mm-hmm. He's lonely. He would like to be with his grandchildren. And the judge, you know, was supposed to, you know, go along with that. But the guardian, who was still bilking the person, would always say, well, this person, meaning this family member here, mom, you know, they're gamblers, or they're drug addicts, or they're abusers, or they're exploiters. And they always use the same words: drug addicts, gamblers, abusers, or exploiters against the family. Hundreds and hundreds of cases where those are the words that are used by the guardian to tell the judge, no, let them stay here. I'm better suited to take care of their mom or their dad than they are. And the judge, Norheim, Hoskin, usually the two judges who automatically say, okay, all right. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, folks. We're going to go ahead. We're not going to be able to, you know, go along with what you're asking us to do. So we're going to make sure that Mr. Schaefer, or Patience Bristol, or April Parks, or one of these others, remains on as the guardian. And we, you know, because the guardian says you're unfit. And some of these families are devastated over that. And as much as not, it's adding such insult to injury.
Right. And the worst part of it is, Steve, they can stand up and say anything, and they don't ever have to produce any evidence to substantiate those charges they levy. As you move east, as you know, you move east, the laundry list changes. And it's they found them living in squalor, covered in feces and urine, half-starved, dehydrated. And most of the time, they couldn't pick out that victim, that elderly person, from a lineup of one person. They couldn't pick them out because they've never seen them. But they will stand up and levy these charges in these tribunals. And they are never asked for, nor do they ever produce one shred of evidence to support the charges that they're levying. And that has got to change. This is hearsay evidence at the very least, and at the worst, to me, it's fraud on the court, if you were in a court. But this Norheim and Hoskins, what has happened to them in the wake of all of this?
They were transferred out of the court that does the guardianship cases and put into another court because the county commission realized that they were crooks. After some really good testimony one day, lieutenant came and spoke, and a number of the victims came and spoke, and the county commission took the side of the victims, and they decided that Norheim and Hoskin needed to be displaced, moved out of the guardianship court and put in juvenile and divorce. And juvenile and divorce, talk about payoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, they got to be making more money in those two courts, you know, taking bribes than they were in the guardianship court.
Yeah.
But they did. They actually, you know, it was a disgrace. And I would have to say now that Hoskin and Judge Hoskin and Judge Norheim have been disgraced, but they're still on the bench.
Yeah. Gee, many Christmas. Just imagine if you had done your job this way, how long you think you'd be employed? And we see these guys. I've got cases sitting here, Steve, that the absolute vitriol from the bench is so terrible. The abuse of the people in there trying to save mom, dad, or whoever is so terrible from the person sitting up there that's supposed to be this judge. And yet these people keep their jobs.
The Judicial Discipline Commission, which is
a bunch
of bull. You know, they receive complaints, and they always take the side of the judge when it comes to any judge that is involved in guardianship scams. They've never, ever done anything to reprimand any of these crooked judges, and they've gotten plenty of reports on them and lots of complaints, but the State Judicial Discipline Commission is useless. And who else do you go to? So, you know, we're pretty much in the, if anything will happen to help us or you in Minnesota or us in Nevada, would be coming from the Department of Justice. It wouldn't be anything to do within our state lines.
Right. Yeah. It, well, that's the thing too. And I tried to explain this to people. There is this process to get to the federal level, and that is your police department has to close an investigation and recommend the FBI investigate. In other words, like you say, invite them in.
Yeah.
Then they have to do an investigation, and based on what they come up with, they recommend to the DOJ whether or not to prosecute. And so that's the process that has to be followed, but you cannot jump out of the state to the federal level. That just doesn't work that way. And,
no, but if there's good publicity, not good publicity, but powerful publicity.
I know what you're saying. Yes.
They will. They'll jump. The feds jump when they see something on 60 Minutes or if they see something on National Geographic. There's certain channels now that'll get their attention. If you have a really good documentary or a tremendous news story, the federal government will intervene sometimes.
Sometimes, but only if they've suffered injury. Well, the way into that is the bilking of Medicare, Medicaid, the block grants that include millions of dollars for elderly services and care. So they're already in as far as that goes. So there's and all the contracting that goes on between state and federal agencies. So to me, that blurs that state line thing, but I'm not a legal. So there you go.
Well, the Americans with Disabilities Act could be drawn into this also because most of the people, first of all, if you're a ward of the court, I guess you're disabled. I mean, I would assume that. I'm not an expert.
Yes.
But I mean, you made a ward of the court. Okay.
Yes.
I'm disabled. What about the ADA? They got power. I mean, we've never really seen them ever get involved in one of these.
No, they're supposed to be the go-to people on this with this guardianship thing is the ADA. Now, their position is that they can't handle this. I got that straight from the horse's mouth. This is
really,
this
I'm
is
sorry
what
to
they
hear.
Are there to do. That's not what they're there to do. And then I went to civil rights. I had some connections there. And so I went to them and I said, you know, these people's civil rights are being violated. This is what's happening to them under these bogus tribunals. And this is where I found out about them leaving them with the right to vote. So that because civil rights deals with housing, education, employment, and the right to vote. Those are the four main tenets of civil rights. And then it gets down to discrimination based on race, gender, age, that type of thing. And as long as they leave them with the rights to vote, the guardian does, they can take everything else from them. Civil rights, they can't sue under civil rights. And so when people say your civil rights have been violated, according to the vernacular of the law, no, they haven't. No, they haven't. It's a technicality. But then this weasel word swapping all the time, you know, that they do, it sounds like, but it isn't. And that goes on, just drives me wild. And but I guess that's what it's intended to do. Steve, our hour with you is up, and I know that's all the time you had to give us. Any parting words, anything to...
My parting words are, if you're thinking of retiring and leaving where you've lived all your life, maybe you should have second thoughts and stay where you are, where your family and loved ones and friends are. Because if you come to one of these Sunbelt states, Florida, Las Vegas, you know, Texas, Arizona, whatever, you might happen to come up to someday when your spouse dies, and you could be targeted if you have a few hundred thousand or a couple of million. You could be targeted, and you could become a ward of the court because you're wealthy, and because they consider you wealthy and you're a mark. So I say stay where you are. Del Webb Sun City, if you want to sue me, you can. I don't think people should be moving here anymore. I'm sorry. Yeah. I love Las Vegas, but I'm telling people, please don't move here. Because when your spouse dies, you become a target for the guardians.
Yes. and you have no defense. There's nobody there. There are people there who would defend you, but are not allowed to. And they're
don't
stopped.
Don't count on the police. Don't count on the courts.
Yeah, there you go. Steve, thank you so much for being my guest this evening. And please let us know what all we can do to help promote this documentary, and we will do it.
I sure will. Thank you so much, Marty. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. And this has just been great having you on. We'll be back tomorrow night with Wild Horse and Burro Radio. They are about to slaughter. This time they're going after the buffalo in Yellowstone, the most pristine, genetically pure herd left on the globe. They've already killed about 2,400 of them over the last couple of years, and now they're aiming for another 1,200. Guess who got the DNA on those? The big M, Monsanto. And so they're going to wipe that herd out. They are killing everything everywhere, including our wild horses and burros. And we're successful, and I say it was a coalition of many thousands of people stopping them from killing the 60,000 horses that were in Utah that they had rounded up and put on that holding facility, and they were just going to sharpshoot them. Anyway, we got that stopped. We've got so much going on, whistleblowers. We'll be back on Thursday evening, and it'll be Lawrence Lucas. We'll be continuing with our series on what's happening inside the USDA, and that's enough to give you nightmares. And then we'll start our week over on Sunday night. Everybody, thank you for tuning in. It's great to have you all here. I appreciate everybody's attention to these shows and the sharing and passing on that you do, because it's really paying off. And we will be at the summit again this year, so look for that. In the meantime, good night, everybody, and have a wonderful end of the week. Bye-bye.